Hey there, I'm Dr. Maya Shunker, and I'm a scientist who studies human behavior. Many of us have experienced a moment in our lives that changes everything, that instantly divides our life into a before and an after. On my podcast, A Slight Change of Plans, I talk to people about navigating these moments. Their stories are full of candor and hard-won wisdom. And you'll hear from scientists who teach us how we can be more resilient in the face of change. Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Summon your anticipation for an all-new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabby Collins. This season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. I sit down with Nicola Coughlan, Luke Newton, Shonda Rhimes, and more. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix, May 16th. Then fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. New episodes drop starting May 2nd.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in LA, and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to this episode of the Weekly Zeitgeist. These are some of our favorite segments from this week, all edited together into one nonstop infotainment laugh extravaganza. So without further ado, here is the Weekly Zeitgeist.
Anyways, we are thrilled to be joined in our third seat by the host of How to Do the Pot, a podcast demystifying cannabis for women. Please welcome back to the show, Ellen Scanlon!
Hi, I'm so happy to be here again.
Oh yes. Thanks for coming back. What's new? How are you doing?
I'm good.
Do you have the goop joint roller?
I don't have the goop joint roller. I'm sort of a pre-roll buyer. Sorry, Miles.
See, no, I buy pre-rolls too because there are ones that are you. Okay, this is the thing. I usually wouldn't buy pre-rolls because the flower that was in pre-rolls was just like the casted off shake and like not
the weed equivalent of chicken McNuggets.
They're just exactly. Yeah. Pink goo. Like I'm trying to eat chicken tenders, you know, real meat. So I would always buy the flower and roll my own. But now there's a lot of pre-rolls that are pretty potent. But also there's some trouble because these dudes in California like sued this company because they're like, yo, you're lying about the percentages on your fucking pre-rolls. Because that is another
huge thing. You are hiding a percentage.
You are hiding a less potent pre-roll behind these numbers. But yeah, Ellen, what's your I feel like a lot of people when they go into dispensaries, shorthand is like how high the percentage is. But I've also experienced things like that, that percentages aren't necessarily indicative of how I'm going to, you know, take that in. How do you determine, you know, what pre-roll is right for you?
Well, I think the first thing that I learned after being in the industry for a while is that sativa indica hybrid is not really going to help you very much. And it's tough because that's kind of what's available and that's the classification and that's usually how people will start. But it's more of a signal, I think. Like if you say, I want an indica, the bud tender is sort of triangulating that to say, like, this person wants to chill out. This person wants to be mellow. Sativa, you want something energizing.
Have intrusive thoughts, in my case.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I tell them how I want to feel. Yeah.
You just go in with a handful of cash and you're like, hi, I'd like one happy, please.
A happy, giggly day, please. Yeah. No stress.
And one mild panic attack.
That was my order. Damn, I shouldn't have ordered that. That's what fucked me up.
Yeah.
When I used to smoke weed.
I'd like to just be chill and not panicked. Oh, okay. Well, then you should go to this side of the store. Oh, huh. Fantastic.
So I start there and then we created this list of the 12 essential strains that we think, you know, everyone should have in their stash. And you don't have to have all 12, but maybe two or three. And so I kind of use that as a guide. Like, you know, if you like OG Kush, then tell them that. If you like a strain, then usually I say, I like that. What else do you have? I have some brands now that I like too. So I get a little brand specific, but it's tough. I mean, walking in, it's like you are a kid in a candy store, but there's so much candy and you don't really know what any of it tastes like. And so it's a little bit hard. The shopping part is still evolving, I think.
For sure.
When are we going to start getting days, international days for a specific strain, the way that, what was the wine that had?
Yeah, Merlot Day.
Merlot Day is today, which like, no matter what kind of wine you drink, the drunk is the same. I know like alcoholics like to be like, no, actually I was white wine drunk and was feeling very bubbly. I don't believe any of that shit. But like weed is much more different. It should have more like knowledge of the strains than
for sure
all the knowledge around different wine types.
Yeah.
I mean, where is our fucking OG Kush holiday? I proclaim August 18th, 818. As OG Kush Day to celebrate the OG Kush growers of the San Fernando Valley. Thank you so much.
Yeah, we've been trying to get an international day together. Let's do it. 818.
There
OG
it is.
Kush Day. I won't be there able to partake, but you know.
You don't need to.
I'd love to
give you a candy cigarette. You can have a candy cigarette next to me. How about
you.
That, champ? Yep.
Drink a little grape juice and have a nice candy cigarette.
And I'll be sipping lean and smoking a blunt.
What is something from your search history?
All right. Well, what I've been searching is Pokemon Scarlet and Violet leaks.
Yeah.
So the game leaked last night, and that means like somebody got an early copy of it, and they're basically uploading photos from the game online because a lot of stuff is under wraps right now. So I've been checking the subreddit for that constantly just for new updates to see new Pokemon. So
what are the good ones? What have you seen that's like, oh, I'm catching that immediately?
Oh, well, there's this one called Smoliv. Okay. And it's like a little olive and it evolves into something called Doliv, which is like a little olive doll looking thing. So I'm super excited about that.
So cuteness overload. I love it. Yeah.
So when a new Pokemon game is released, there are new Pokemans who are introduced. So that's what is exciting, besides there just being a new game.
Yes. And especially in this generation, they're doing this like whole future and past thing. So like they're taking old Pokemon and giving them what would you call them? Like archaic forms. And they're taking old Pokemon and giving them future forms and stuff too. So a little bit of new and then reinventing the wheel a little bit.
I like the cute outfits and the new towns. I like when I get my bike and I can just ride around through a field catching things. It's so simple. And then you get like a little happy tune and then you just collect without having to spend money, which, you know, for some of us is a challenge. So I really appreciate Pokemon being there for us.
But yeah, the game comes out in like 2 weeks. So it's going to be so fun.
Mm.
Yeah.
I'm personally in the process of like the Pokemon wave is coming with my 4-year-old and 6-year-old. Like my 6-year-old's friends are talking Pokemon.
Yeah.
He just like hasn't gotten interested in it. And so I'm just like, I'm going to have to do a deep dive. I'm going to, you know, have to know what any of this shit means in the not too distant future. Yes. But for now, I am enjoying the brain space that I get to devote to things that are not Pokemon.
Don't be the dad that calls everything Pikachu, okay? Oh, there are many different versions. You should learn at least 50 of them. And maybe get him like an old school Game Boy so he can like really get down on some of the classics. But also, card shops all over LA. There's a ton of them here. Yes. You can go and get like vintage. Some people sell like your whole binder. Sometimes they'll do like 10 mystery ones for a dollar or whatever. Just get him some cards, teach him how to play the actual game.
Yes.
And he'll be hooked. And then you'll have a fun way to interact. He could teach you the game. You could just play it. It's fun. You know, it's not looking at another screen.
It's also a good introduction to predatory capitalism, because when you're like six, there's like the 7-year-olds who are like, yo, let me see that card. Here, I got this one that I'll trade for. Yeah. I mean, that's what like baseball cards did for me when I was his age. So yeah, it's coming.
I love it.
I'll be studied up the next time this comes up on the Daily Zeitgeist. Perfect. Or maybe I won't. Maybe they'll just go in a different direction. Minecraft is the other thing. But
For sure.
Yeah.
What is it? Roblox also.
Roblox, yeah. I know, but like that's Minecraft is thing. Really everywhere. That. Like just even trick or treating. Like we get 1,000 trick or treaters like every Halloween, and we had some friends over who were, you know, like 8 years younger than I am, but they were calling out all the Pokemon costumes by name. Like they, you know, I got Pikachu. That was the one that I recognized. But they were like calling all of them out. And I guess, you know, 90% of the costumes that I had just been like, oh, it's a funny little guy. That was what I thought. Oh, it's a funny little animal thing. That's cute. Oh, you're like a little dragon thing. We're actually Pokemons the whole time. And I'm a fool. But anyways, I'm going to work on it. This is actually goes back to I used to run a site called Cracked, and like our editorial team was all just right on the brink of like being too old to know about Pokemon. And then even like the younger ones didn't really like we just had like a editorial bias where they were just like not in on Pokemon. And we like had multiple meetings where we were like, I think we got to hire for Pokemon to like get coverage in the Pokemon world, because we're just like so bad at this.
There's a lot of lists to be made for Pokemon.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
I forget that Pokemon appeals to children at this stage. Like, I forget that it's like made for children. And I'm like, oh yeah, kids like this.
Kids don't know nothing about classic Pokemon. You didn't have to buy a light that shined into your game system so you could see the screen at night. Yes. Okay, you don't know how difficult it was collecting those early packs. Yes. Getting a band at school. It's a struggle to be a part of the system. Okay.
Absolutely.
Well, hopefully I reminded you that there's some easy trades to be made because you can just prey on these
scam kids the children.
Just getting, just getting into it. Don't know. They don't know better yet.
Perfect.
Let's stick with you, Hannah. What is something you think is overrated?
All right. I'm going to do another one. I know I'm going to get dragged and I know I'm going to get slammed, but sparkling water or mineral water. Why? Just why? I still don't understand it. It's not just that I don't like it. I don't see the necessity.
Wow.
Why not just water?
Carbonated water is a frivolous pursuit.
Thank you.
I see.
Bothers me to be asked sparkling or still.
Or still.
Right. Of course still. Who? Anyway.
Get confused. They say sparkling or still or flat. Don't they say flat too? I'm just like,
just give me
you're
water.
Like, and now is flat old sparkling water that you let get flat? Yeah. And now you're serving to me as that? Or is it never carbonated?
Totally overrated. All the shows with the posh women with their sparkling water. I can't stand it anymore. And that's my story and I'm sticking to it.
Okay, now tell me, Hannah, does this come from, for you, you're like, if things have bubbles in it, there better be flavor.
Thank
and
you.
It should be.
Yes.
I'm asking, is that sort of the logic path
a little
that,
bit,
that has
yes.
you arrived there?
I just
there?
Think like, water should not be messed with. Water is water is water, and it shouldn't be messed around with, and that's all. And you're right. If it's bubbly, give me some limonada flavor or something.
Make it a soda, please.
Thank you.
Okay.
I'm mad
now. It's like sort of the way my mom would talk about it from being from Japan, where she's like, I don't understand why people drink bubble water. She's like, it's water. You need water.
I love your mom.
And she had, she's a very like rigid thing of, she'd be like, oh no. Like if you offered her like sparkling, she's like, like,
make a show of it.
And there's this assumption that it's the bougie water, right? Like, of course you want it. Of course, you know, right. I'm being generous and giving you the sparkling water.
Right, right, right.
Not like the, you know, the peasant water.
Right.
You know what I just found out also is that seltzer water and like all those things have carbonic acid in it. I have a friend who's a dentist and they were like, yeah, don't drink like bubbly water and think it's the same as drinking regular water. It's really bad for your teeth. Like carbonic acid. So another mark against it.
Thank you, dentist. And Miles' mom. Yes. Okay,
there you go.
They can be on the WhatsApp chat.
Yeah.
She's Lila, what is something you think is overrated?
I know that y'all will relate to this, Miles and Jack. I know you'll relate to this, but collagen creams. Collagen creams for the face.
Thank you.
Okay. Right?
Say less.
I know.
I thought it was going to be an audio thing.
Let me tell you why. There have been multiple studies that have shown that these creams with collagen, why applied on your skin, the molecules aren't big enough to penetrate into your skin. It's been like proven and studied and all these things. Yet, it's like crazy how much it is available and how many people are buying it and how many people are living by it. You got to buy this cream. And yeah, I just feel like, now, every time I see it, I'm like, this is scam. I'm not going to fall for the okie doke. This collagen cream don't work. But I might try the ingestible, like, liquid collagen. What about you guys? Are you guys using collagen at all?
Well, as you know, I tried to sell you my personal brand of collagen cream before we started recording. So I am feeling a little attacked right now, but I don't use it. Absolutely not. It's complete snake oil. But
I'm a royal jelly person myself.
Oh.
Yeah. So that's
how skin looks great, both of y'all. Yeah. So
I mean, oh my God, thank some you so say much. It's genetics. Hello. I would agree probably that it's genetics, but I like to say it's from rubbing these jellies on my face.
Wait, jelly what is face. Royal jelly? Jelly face? Hey, jelly face. What is royal jelly?
Royal jelly is like, I know it because in Japan, like in Asian like skincare products, people are going wild for royal jelly. Like it's like comes from honeybees.
Oh.
It's like a secretion where they're like, oh, like it's fantastic for, all I know is royal jelly was a big fad I remember witnessing as a kid. And like my mom and aunts were like, royal jelly. And then I just saw bees on the cover and I know it's from bees, but apparently the people talk about it for skincare.
And their skin is amazing today.
Yeah. Or, you know, just go with whatever Cindy Crawford is using, Dr. Obagi, that I see late at night on TV
that
when I leave the TV.
That's called surgery. Don't follow these celebrities.
Yeah. Right.
Who knows what they do in them clinics.
Yeah, seriously.
What's something you think is underrated?
I don't know. I had a nice apple today. I was like, when's the last time you fucking ate an apple?
Right.
Yeah. Apples are great.
Bit right into it.
I'm an apple jack. I love me some apples. That cereal was named after me.
That's a really good cereal.
Yeah. It's very sweet. Like, just so much sugar.
I like how their tagline for that cereal was, it doesn't taste like apples. It doesn't taste like the thing it's named for that you would assume it tastes like. It tastes like a third thing.
I think apples have the highest ratio of like the actual thing is much better than anything that's flavored after it. Like any of the synthetic flavors for apple just aren't as good as just a nice crispy.
Yeah, it really
sweet
just,
apple.
Sometimes you're just at the farmer's market and you're like, oh, fuck, what's in season? Apples?
Yeah.
You refrigerate your apples?
I don't.
No.
You ever like to eat a cold apple?
I do sometimes. I have been known to enjoy
that's
that.
That's demonic energy, putting a fresh apple
I'm a demon. You know, I eat soft fries and fucking ice cold apples.
Yeah, what's up with these soft fries? I
fucking love them.
What does that mean?
Just like when you get like, you know, like when you get like a fry and then you get that one like loose one that's just like.
Oh, the one that's like too oily?
Yeah.
That's what you like?
Yeah.
That's weird, Miles.
Yeah. My doctor says I have some problems, but whatever.
You like, know, it's not just the too
the whole
oily.
Thing
you
about
like
the fries is that they're crispy. They
and crispy. Miles likes a whole batch that is soft. He likes In-N-Out
that,
fries.
That's
I like
spaghetti,
a, no,
man.
I told you, I go a step further. I ask them to fuck them up harder.
Rare. You ask for the medium rare.
Where? Blue. Like In-N-Out?
Blue fries.
In-N-Out, yeah.
Yeah. I said make
well,
them In-N-Out,
the fries are kind of garbage anyway.
I know, for sure.
That is
we're
the rational take. But
allowed to
is...
say this because we're from Los Angeles.
The only way I lean into them is to go like softer. Yeah. Like I like a softer, floppy. That's why I said like I went to Seattle and I keep bringing this up. Dick's in Seattle had the best like meat like in between where like the edges were crispy, but also a little bit soft. I don't like eating like
soft dicks.
Crunchy ass.
Do you like a steak fry? Like a big
that's a little
boy?
A little too massive.
Soft
little
inside?
A little too massive.
Yeah, well, you might as well give me a baked potato at that
point.
You
know, I had actually some really good potato pancakes at the Red Lion the other day. You ever get the potato pancakes there?
No.
Oh, they're fucking so... You might like them as a connoisseur of soft fries. Because they're just like... They're like a pupusa, almost. They're like... They're not it's like a potato like a pancake, like a Jewish potato pancake that's like a big hash brown.
You know,
grated.
Yeah, yeah.
These are truly like a blob of mashed potatoes that's been like deep fried and then like smushed.
Yeah.
And it's so good.
See?
You got to try it.
See?
See?
Can I ask you one more question? Because now this is my show.
Thanks for having us. Yeah.
Do you like shoestring fries?
Yeah. I like shoestring.
What about shoestring onions?
Oh, onion strings?
Yeah.
Yeah, I fuck with an onion string.
I think
too.
Those are fucking super underrated.
Yeah,
all very
crispy. 100%.
Yeah, I mean, not necessarily. You get the softy boys in there. The softy brothers.
Yeah.
Softy brothers. A couple of softy brothers in your onion strings.
Uncut fries.
I was picturing the ones that like come in a can that are.
No.
Okay.
We're at an establishment. We're talking about like a Bloomin' Onion.
Yeah.
Almost.
Oh, you mean like those like French's onion strings? Like they use like a casserole?
Bro.
Yeah, I was talking French's.
Yeah.
I'm cultured, so I fuck with French's. You
I
know,
fuck
I'm
with
a
the French
Francophile.
Stuff.
Does anybody prefer a soft apple over a crisp apple? Like that's a question because
that's sicko shit.
That is sicko. Like, but apples persist. Like, there are plenty of apple strains that go pretty mushy and stay on store shelves. And I'm just wondering, is that even an opinion that people have, or is it just a categorical failure of the apple industry?
Part of the fun of eating real food, eating real fruit, is that you're
got
playing,
a bad one. Yeah.
Yeah, you're playing apple roulette every time.
Yeah.
Will you get the bad apple in the chamber?
Right.
Or the most delicious apple.
Mm.
I do want to hear from any listeners. If you are a mushy apple person, don't just take the opinion, but like really, if there is a mushy apple that you fuck with, like I feel like Red Delicious tend to be on the mushier side. If you're like Red Delicious is actually the best apple, let me know because I am confused about the persistence of the Red Delicious and some of the other kind of mushier types of apple. All right. Well, now that we got the important stuff out of the way, let's take a quick break and we'll come back and talk about election results and how different parts of the country are taking them.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent, telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. Now, this is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200%ers. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. If you ever felt like you were always too much this while also never being enough that, this is the podcast for you. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more via my own personal stories, along with interviews with inspiring thought leaders from our community. Then, every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community that you need to know. So much of what makes our community so beautiful is our diversity, yet too often, those of us who don't fit into this dumb, stereotypical box of whatever it means to be Latino are left without a voice or just forgotten about. On this show, I celebrate the uniqueness of our culture and invite you to walk in your authenticity. Listen to Life as a Gringo as a part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but
same old us. Oh, yeah.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed, and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
And we're back. And I think it's time to check in with Fox News again. It's always nice to see how they're reacting to bad news for their party.
Love a little fascist freak out. I think we can have a little Fox News rage as a little treat for everybody this Friday morning. Why not? Because they are still angrily dealing with what the heck happened in these midterms. I thought it was a red wave. Here is a fantastic supercut from Kat Abu on Twitter.
I can't believe John Fetterman won.
This is, in fact, bad for the Democrats. They're going to misread this. It's like, oh, we won.
Joe Biden was not punished.
This morning, had there been a big red wave, everybody would be going, blame Joe Biden. Can't say that now.
You can't say that right now.
It's still a win for pro-lifers.
This new generation is totally brainwashed.
When we just owned the libs, we didn't win those races.
This is not a surprise. We knew it would be extremely tight.
Forget the red wave, the red tide, whatever it was. It doesn't matter at this point.
They're always going to spin things against us. Mm-hmm.
Single women and voters under 40 have been captured by Democrats. So we need these ladies to get married.
Hey. Okay.
I've been saying that for years.
Right?
Yeah, so that's they're starting, like, look, they're having an interesting week. There was one where Tucker Carlson, I think last night or the day before, he was like, "Now what happens to all these people who we gave millions of dollars to?" Like he's so mad at, like,
he wants
the
his money back.
Class.
He's going to carry in the election.
I don't know what it is. I think he's more speaking on behalf of probably these mega donors that he convinced to go all in on these midterms, like with this terrible fucking plan, and is now trying to lay it at someone else's feet. When, let's be real, like, him and Hannity have some pretty outsized power in terms of how the GOP just,
oh my,
like, speaks.
God.
You know?
I mean, can we also just have a moment to recognize that, I guess it's Gen Z, they do not do surveys. Too many surveys. Too many surveys already in their life. They're like, I'm not doing a survey.
Yeah. Like, I don't pick up calls from my fucking grandma.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Pick up this unknown number.
Survey.
Yeah.
I'll show up. Yeah. I mean, although I, you know, I do think just yelling at your viewers is the way that they've always energized their party. So yeah. I feel like it's all part of this, you know, basically dominant submissive relationship they all have with each other.
Right.
And now they're just, it's like, how do you, what are you doing? You guys, bad. Yes. And so everyone's gonna be like, okay. And like, it will actually energize them. So I'm a little bit, I just see that and I want to revel in it, but yeah. It concerns me.
Well, I think what is interesting though, is how few people who like Republicans who actually did lose elections, they didn't go straight to the bullshit thing, which is interesting. Like a lot of people suspect that it could be because of like the lawsuits that are hanging around and like potential other legal issues that might arise from that kind of like election denialism that may have tampered the appetite to do that. But that was one thing I was fully like, okay, because before we heard like people in certain counties like, we already want an audit of the vote, like before election day. So that felt like a preview of things to come, but it hasn't quite materialized in the way I had feared.
Yeah, in that supercut, I forget who said it, but just the, and Biden wasn't punished, totally Tucker. Sounds, yeah, Tucker. That was Tucker, that totally sounds like when the Grinch is mad that the Christmas still went on.
Yeah.
Yeah, like yeah, yeah.
It came with no ribbons. It came with no bows.
Yeah. Here's the sound of singing. Yeah, yeah.
Right.
So let's talk about, because I also feel like there's a inability to cope with what we've seen in some, you know, more local, but very like, I guess also in the Fetterman race, but like progressive values had a really good day at the poll. And specifically like the crime wave narrative that I think a lot of the mainstream media, even though they're supposedly liberal, they really bought into this, that like crime wave is going to scare voters. Democrats must double down on police, must do this. And like, it's been just a persistent narrative ever since Chesa Boudin in San Francisco, like, was recalled. The media has been like, progressive politics is a loser. It's a wave. We're all fucked.
Yeah.
And that just really hasn't borne out, but we're still not really seeing that messaging breakthrough.
No, it's interesting. Again, no one's really talking. There were a lot of progressive DAs that either were elected or reelected across the country. You know, like this is like Philly, Chicago, Iowa, Texas, Oklahoma City, like a whole assortment of states from red to purple to blue. You know, they had it all. And Oklahoma City, I just want to point out too, not necessarily a place or like Iowa or Texas where the shorthand of the media is like, oh, woke bastion, like, you know, San Francisco. Although like that one with Boudin was a little bit of an outlier because San Francisco is like a little more of a unique quantity when you look at electoral politics.
Yeah, probably like, billionaires like per square mile of any location. So
and
yeah,
most people are like, it's all dreadlocks and Birkenstocks, okay? Right. Like, no, it isn't. But anyway, in many of these areas, though, where progressive DAs were elected or reelected, they also have significant minority populations. And those are the communities that tend to experience much of the crime firsthand. So they are truly the ones, too, when they're voting, are the ones seeing like, man, this kind of fucked up policy does not work. In fact, it's so regressive. It actually just feels like people are just held in captivity for money, which they are. I want to put this quote from law professor Laura Bazalone, who's from the University of San Francisco, was on Democracy Now! This morning. She said, was sort of describing what is happening is this, quote, this understanding, she said, I think what all this tells you is that this experiment with criminal justice reform, this understanding that we can't incarcerate our way to safety, that the kind of cruelty that some of these punishments are exerting on people to no good effect, and then the other additional problems like wrongful conviction or just criminalizing poverty so that rich people who are dangerous can buy their way out, but poor people have to stay inside, that there are a lot of voters who realize that none of these policies are humane, just, or effective.
Yeah.
Well, and I think just also, let's turn a complete blind eye to all the white collar crime. Like it is so focused,
like
so
do.
Specific on, you know, basically a poor person, a poor or a crazy person is going to shoot you. That's it.
Right.
Right. Rob you and shoot you.
Yeah.
Right.
assault you and shoot you, whatever that is. And that's it. And why is that? You know, well, that gets a little muddy.
Right.
But all of the white collar crime, all of that is just always sort of like, no, that's under control. Really?
Right. Which is because you could. Yeah, like you could probably draw pretty interesting lines to like corporate profiteering and poverty to the people. They're like, and then those people are like, ooh, I'm poor and violent. I think the real violence is actually happening in the C-suites of a lot of these corporations. But
I mean,
again,
I was just in, took my son, because it was day off school, to the Met, and just looking, you know, still some of the galleries are the Sackler galleries, and we all know about the Sacklers and their involvement in profiting so highly off of oxycodone and selling opiates and marketing that. And, you know, I think there was definitely something talked about. Were those people why isn't that a story every single day, you know? Of course,
right?
I think when we have such like media consolidation with the billionaire class, like they know, it's like, dude, that the people, the guys who own this place, they might not want stories like that coming out of
exactly
here. Let's talk about the poor people. All right,
they also actively marketed and created a problem that is still killing hundreds of thousands of people, like killing people every day in the local media. And instead, the local media is focused on like too much shoplifting and CBS.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And I live in New York. So that is a place that is the story of crime always exists. And I know people, some of my family's in Canada, but even other places, they're always like, God, God, New York must be so scary right now. And I'm like, it is?
Right. I mean,
That was one of the social media responses I saw to people on, you know, L.A. had a lot of progressive candidates do very well and progressive ballot measures, and the existing sheriff get voted out like definitively. And I saw a lot of people being like, well, you must be the only person from L.A. who hasn't been mugged or robbed this year. And
I've been like, here my whole life, family.
Yeah. Never. We're good here. You're just seeing Fox News's version of Los Angeles. It's wild how much Fox News focuses on like very specific cities and like getting a narrative going.
Well, it has to, because it's saying, look what happens in the cities where these libs live. They think they know it all, and there's shit on the ground. Like, that's really what they're all trying. And it's so bad. And it's funny because there are so many like boomer tweets where people are like, oh, like you see like a post about crime in like New York, and they're like, I've always wanted to go back to New York City, you know, but guess that's never going to happen with the way things look. I care too much about my safety. I'm like, y'all are really eating this shit up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, and you know, for those of us who live here, we're like, good, keep that PR going out because we need less people.
Yeah,
place,
exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. You want some like out of town to be like, maybe I'll go to Brooklyn, and you want their first idea to be like, they'll be like,
no,
ah!
I mean, I remember before the pandemic, you know, I've lived here 20 years, and just before the pandemic, sitting on a subway and just watching, you know, what I'm just going to call very entitled tourists who, you know, they were a little too casual with their New York experience on the subway. And I just wanted to just like, I don't want anyone to be afraid, but I was like, shouldn't you be just a little more afraid? Like, you don't own this place. You're visiting.
Right.
Okay. You're visiting.
Right.
Seriously.
But so the New York Times, I want to specifically call out for their lack of coverage and not just lack of coverage of like this progressive movement and grassroots movement that we're seeing like come through and start to show real promise in some of these local elections and, you know, in the big what was supposed to be like the focus of the election night with Fetterman defeating Oz. But like I don't feel like they've really figured out how to spin that. And to that point, the New York Times, the day after the election, published a piece in the opinion section, but it was very much couched in like, here are statistics and here are the facts. And we talked to pollsters and a Harvard sociologist. The article is titled, "For Republicans, Crime Pays, No Matter What Else Happens." And the entire premise of the article is that the Republicans really doubled down on crime in this election. I'm just going to read a quote. Like, they quote, a Democratic pollster is reinforcing this point that, like, it's a winner for Republicans and a loser for Democrats. And this is a quote from a pollster. The 2022 midterms will be remembered as a toxic campaign, but an effective one in labeling Democrats as pro-crime. Greenberg wrote in How Democrats Mishandled Crime, a November 3rd American Prospect article. When voters in our survey were asked what they feared the most if Democrats win full control, and then like just 56% chose crime and homelessness out of control, you know, all of the talking points that go along with this. But the article just, I think they wrote it before the election results and just removed a couple of the more strongly worded parts, because they even mention Pennsylvania. The Republican focus on crime is reflected in spending data on November 3rd, and the reason Republican attacks on crime are so potent, Li Zhao, a reporter at Vox, wrote, Republicans have spent $157 million on crime-related ads, and the breakdown is even starker in the Pennsylvania Senate race, where Republicans have spent nearly $12 million on crime ads compared to $2.5 million on the economy and inflation. And they don't go on to mention that that was a loser. That was a losing strategy. And it just, it goes down, like they go down to interview like Paul Begala, and he's like, it worked for Clinton. They just need to be really tough on crime and double down on policing and the death penalty and just all these like old school, like 90s political
takes. It worked
that, like,
in 92 after the riots.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, what the fuck are we talking? Yeah. Yeah. Then maybe when people were ignorant as shit, like, it's so weird. I'm wondering when the new, like, when all corporate media, like, I mean, they're never going to, but like, they've really shown they are so out of touch. Nothing they said is in touch with anything. The amount of red wave coming coverage on the New York Times. This was an article from what, October 19th. Democrats feared Red October has arrived. Many Democrats hoped it would be a weird election. But with Election Day just 3 weeks away, the midterms aren't shaping up that way. Mm-hmm. And.
But let's pretend that motivated people. Let's just pretend that there was some potential. And let's just pretend, you know, even in New York, where if you were a Democrat, people are always like, your vote, you know, it counts, but it doesn't really count. You know, I was at a show with a bunch of people that work in politics, and they were like, "You every vote is going to count tomorrow." Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I'm new to voting, so I just became an American citizen recently, but I was definitely going to do it. Thanks. Mm-hmm. But I do feel, I haven't seen the numbers on the turnout, but I felt like it was really good.
Yeah.
So I don't like that we are driven by fear.
Yeah. I mean, New York was a little different. It wasn't great for Democrats, which a lot of people were surprised because the party ended up fighting a bunch of candidates on the left, like spent more energy fighting candidates on the left than like attacking like this crime, like Lee Zeldin's crime wave insistence, right. Which motivated a lot of Republicans to come out like in an interesting way, because I think that's where New York's a little different because it is so blue. Every Republican's like, exactly, get them all out.
Right.
And like they fully turned up while others like, it's fine. I don't know.
New York's not that blue, by the way. New York is, first of all, historically, like they were pro-slavery at the beginning of like they when it was, you know, the Dutch East Indies colony founding it, and like that kind of reverberated down through the politics. There's a lot of Republican mayors and shit. There's a former chief of police mayor. Like New York City has like very, you're right, it's like very specific and unexpected politics that don't really fit into the overall narrative.
I mean, more in the sense of like for the Republican voter, they can look at a Democrat governor, senator, other leaders in that sense to say the leadership is blue.
Yeah.
And that is a motivating force for people to come out. But I'm wondering, like, you know, so there have been so many bad takes, and shout out to the people on Twitter that have just been collecting everyone's terrible bad faith arguments prior to the election, because we really should be like, what's your strategy for like having better, like a better way to engage with like the stories that are happening rather than seeing like what the herd is doing and then be like, well, here's my take on the herd mentality.
Right. Just all editorial.
Yeah. And it's all covering it like it's a sporting event. And so this article doesn't explicitly do this, but it does essentially do this, which I think is sort of the mainstream Democrat and mainstream media apparatus sort of I don't know, conception of how Democrats can possibly conceive of crime. They can either double down on like basically be a Republican about it and be like, we need to fund, like extra fund the police and support the death penalty like Clinton did. We can ignore that crime is a problem or just say defund the police and offer no further context. Like those are the three options that they are dealing with in this article. And it's just like a Tucker Carlsonian bad faith argument of like how to even approach this. And so they published this article after this overall strategy was shown to backfire in a lot of like really significant ways for the Republican Party. And they completely ignore anywhere where there is like this alternative messaging that came through and worked like at a local level.
Right.
The, you know, we talked on yesterday's episode about Kenneth Mejia, who ran a campaign that was, he's like 31, just really focused. He was a defund the police candidate, and that was like his most explicit position. And he outperformed both mayoral candidates, both the like very mainstream Democratic candidate and also the, you know, fake Democrat Republican Rick Caruso. He vastly outperformed them by just giving specifics, by just right. being like, here's like when you say defund the police, look how much they are funded compared to everything else.
Yeah.
And like, so yeah. all you needed to do was speak honestly and respect people's intelligence on the subject instead of like this whole Paul Begala, James Carville thing where it's all this like smoke and mirrors and we have to message it this way. And like,
people don't understand. You can't get them in touch with their safety unless you do a real horrible, violent act in front of them. And that's where our money should be going
tomorrow. Defund the police, dumbest thing I heard since my mama tried to put a boot on my head and call it a bonnet. What the fuck are you talking about?
I think it all, what you have to say, though, all broke down when you said, and respect their other person's intelligence. That is ridiculous. We do not do that, okay?
Right.
Can
yeah.
do that. That's we the must thing be that more we're patronizing, work. Jack. Like, so I do think this goes, like, each generation gets a little bit savvier at dealing with the media than the previous generation. But the media is run by older generations, and they are working with assumptions that, like, people are different than they actually are. And that's what, like, we saw Gen Z actually come out and vote, and they didn't vote the way that anybody in the mainstream media expected them to. And it's like, yeah, they voted in a way that seems like they...
They're just looking at the problems. They like, oh, these look like solutions.
And, yeah.
Right. Aligned with their values and based on policies and based on, you know, yeah. all the stuff that we're trying to actually talk about in a real way instead of, yeah. just all the smoke and mirrors and the, this is going to happen. Just wait. Yeah. You're going to wake up and all your rights are going to be stripped away. And then what are you going to do?
Yeah. yeah.
And it's yeah. on, I keep comparing it to like that the M. Night Shyamalan movie, The Village. Where they really think,
oh, yeah.
You just keep telling everybody the same shit over. You don't want to go out there. You don't want to see what's out there. But guess what? Most people are living out there. They yeah. don't actually live. So your village ass messaging doesn't resonate to somebody who lives in the area where they're like, yeah, that's a motherfucking airplane. Yeah. Oh, y'all didn't hear about that in the village? Well, that's on y'all. And this whole election, I feel like, was really defined, at least to me, is what I'm seeing, like broadly, by just people beginning to feel the disconnect between policies that uphold the status quo and what their actual day-to-day lives are like. And
yes.
from there, using their own intelligence to be like, I see somebody who's destitute, or I look at my own situation where I can barely afford housing. And I don't think the plan should be, yo, kick these people out to the Mojave Desert where they can just expire in the sun. It's, I think we need more affordable housing.
Right.
You know, they're like, right. what the fuck is going on? These woke people. No. Talk solution.
What about tax cuts for luxury planes?
Yeah, I do have to call out this Harvard sociologist, though, for they made this claim. So they were like, Democrats want to claim that crime isn't a problem, but that ignores that crime is a problem in, you know, black neighborhoods and poor neighborhoods. So, you know, not funding the police is racist, is
miss
essentially
me with that
the
shit.
Argument that they make. And it's like, to your point, Miles, we saw that people who live in neighborhoods that are affected by higher crime are not buying into this bullshit narrative yeah. that like the way to attack this is by fucking funding a police force that acts like an occupying army. Like, they know that this is bullshit, and getting Paul Begala and a Harvard sociologist to tell them otherwise isn't tricking anyone.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Good luck to them.
Don't you remember? That's how we solve things. Give them all guns. Why doesn't everyone have a gun?
Yeah, exactly. And then even then, a lot of people are like, no, I don't even think that. What? You really said that out loud?
They also, they quote the, so because this is a crime article, they had to like quote the crime statistics, which are very like complicated, and they point in different directions in different parts of the country. And they were like, but the one thing we're seeing is more gun violence and more murders, but they don't mention like, because there are way more guns, and anytime there's more access to guns, that's what happens in this country, because again, that's just seen as a, I guess, childish argument, because it doesn't take into account the reality that, like, well, you know, gun manufacturers own all of us, so we can't actually say that. What are you, a child? Get the fuck out of here.
Right, exactly. Shh, quiet. Daddy's listening.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. Got to meet with Wayne LaPierre
I'm
later.
I'm continuing to search Kenneth Mejia on the New York Times just to see, like, when will they mention this race that is, like, a great blueprint for how the Democratic Party should move, like, all at once yesterday. And the only mention so far is a Halloween article about how, like, when Democrats go against each other, it gets nasty, folks. And they quote his opponent claiming that he is a anarchist and an anti-Semite. They put that in there, and he's not. And it's like absolute, but that's the only thing that they've mentioned about this candidate who just, you know, used a strategy
anarchist.
Anarchist.
I mean, that's the smear for people who believe that less physical police presence and like more support for communities is the answer, is they immediately go,
yes.
Oh, so you're for anarchy. Right.
Yeah, right. Exactly. No. Lawless society. You want just nothing.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And as a Jew, I will say, you know, most people are anti-Semites. So you just sort of like, you just, that's like a penny. You just get rid of that.
All right. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk holiday movies. We'll be right back.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. Now, this is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200 percenters. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. If you ever felt like you were always too much this while also never being enough that, this is the podcast for you. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more via my own personal stories, along with interviews with inspiring thought leaders from our community. Then, every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community that you need to know. So much of what makes our community so beautiful is our diversity, yet too often, those of us who don't fit into this dumb stereotypical box of whatever it means to be Latino are left without a voice or just forgotten about. On this show, I celebrate the uniqueness of our culture and invite you to walk in your authenticity. Listen to Life as a Gringo as a part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
And we're back. And Wakanda Forever drops in 2 days as of the day that this Wednesday. Episode drops. It's yes. Wednesday. Drops on Friday. Reviews are in.
Or Thursday night.
They look, you know? They're between like solid and glowing. Super producer Joelle, I think, saw it. And I'm not allowed to say what she said. But suffice it to say, it looks very good. Things are looking... very good for this movie.
Pretty good over there.
Pretty good. Early estimates suggest that everyone in America is going to see it at least twice this weekend. the dollar figures are wild. They're like, yeah, we're seeing like 250 million in like one weekend. It's crazy. Anyways, a lot of people are going to see this movie. I'm going to see this movie. I don't know if I'm going to see it this weekend, but I'm going to see it ASAP. And it raises the question. There's recently a Cinemark map. So Cinemark, the theater chain, created one of those maps where, like, this is everybody's favorite movie theater candy by state. And it is one of those maps that actually seems to be based in fact. You can tell because the results are pretty boring in some cases. Like, they're... a big chunk of the country is just like, yeah, we like M&M peanuts, just like you would expect, because M&M peanuts are good. Somebody writing about it was like, do they like M&M peanuts because they come in yellow wrappers and that's the easiest snack to see in the dark? It's like, no.
Have you ever eaten in a movie theater? It's about no look eating the whole time. You're like, where's my bag of whatever by my lap? And just keep shuffling that into your mouth.
Who is putting that thought into it, is being like, which of these is going to be easiest for me to see in the dark?
Right. First off, I want to ask, what is everybody's favorite movie candy? Just so we can establish some kind of baseline here.
Yeah.
Mine isn't even on here. It's the Raisinettes.
Ooh. Oh, great answer.
Okay. Good answer. Good answer.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Good answer.
I mean, have you guys ever taken some lightly buttered popcorn, just slightly, you know, just a dab. You take your Raisinettes, you sprinkle them on top of that popcorn, you sit in the dark, and every
like
handful is like a bite of, a burst of surprise and joy. I just, I've also had major stomach pains and vomiting after one.
Raisinettes do not sit well in my stomach, but they're so fun going down.
What?
And
I can't taste I don't like their taste at all. I'm sorry, Leela.
Controversial.
Me and Leela have not gone to the movies yet. I mean, you should come here. You could just drive up and we should go to see Wakanda together. We can see it three times. I'm going purposefully to the blackest theater in Oakland at Grand Lake Theater. That's where we're going to go see it. And mine is Whoppers.
Whopper is also not on here.
Also not on here. Malted chocolate balls?
Those balls? I love those. They're malt.
Thank you very much. Yes. Yeah. Although they crunch, and that's not ideal for a movie situation. I realize that. Mm. Still,
it's a light crunch.
I love Whoppers.
Mine's also not on here, but Miles, you do yours first. But what is going on? You guys are non-representative.
I'm telling you, it's like the elections. Thank you very much.
I think we're out here. Just look, we contain multitude. This is America. You know, don't just reduce us to one logo on a state.
Yeah,
I would eat like Nerds ropes if they have them.
Yeah, Nerds ropes are fantastic.
Or like Twizzler. I think I had some recently.
Twizzler,
like a
Twizzler is red vine.
That you could like split apart though. No, it was like, I think it was like a sweet and tart. Oh, you know what? It could be sweet and tart ropes.
Sweet tart ropes are the number one candy in Alaska at the one right. movie theater in Alaska. No, that's not
next to eating Dungeness crab in the theater. Which I'm they do. But yeah. I like the fruity kind of like sour candies. Like I'll go crazy if I'm like on 420 when I went a couple years ago, I got popcorn. I get a little bit of a cup of nacho cheese to dip my popcorn in.
Wow.
Okay, because I'm a savage.
You are a savage.
I get the candy ropes or whatever, and then I got to have some kind of peanut butter situation. It could be Reese's Pieces. It could be peanut M&M's.
Can I just say, Red Vine's headquarters is 5 minutes away from me.
Wow.
Okay, so let's get into this.
So let's. I realized that we just started in talking about our favorite, but we should say, so the number one answer is M&M peanuts, and M&M peanuts are dominant from Texas and every state surrounding Texas, essentially. It's also Massachusetts, Rhode Island, Connecticut, New York, like a bunch of those states, or not New York, actually. New York is Cookie Dough Bites. So M&M peanuts have like a big stronghold in big chunks of the country that are very populous, and also Wisconsin. And then there is a big divide. It was mentioned before Miles said Red Vines. One of you said Red Vines are Twizzlers or Twizzlers are Red Vines. They are separate. They're different candies, and Twizzlers are the East Coast, and then Red Vines are... So Red Vines are the number one candy, Washington, Oregon, California, Nevada. It's the most, it is holding down an entire Idaho, Colorado. It's holding down that entire chunk of the map and
nowhere else.
Yeah. Mm. But Red Vines started in Chicago, and Twizzlers, I think, started in New York. And it's been that way since day one that they're like, you know, regionally. It's either, you know, either the Mississippi or west of the Rockies. We don't know where exactly to divide it, but Red Vines are dominant on one side of the country, and Twizzlers the other.
I wonder what the story is there. That's fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. I wonder if, like, if you went into, like, a movie theater in, like, fucking Maryland or something, and you're like, let me get some Red Vines, and they're like, Red Vines? Like, yeah. if it would be like that kind of an outward thing. Because when I
didn't know about Red Vines when I grew up on the East Coast. I only knew of Twizzlers.
I knew about Twizzlers from the commercials, but I never saw Twizzlers in the store growing up in LA. I always saw Red Vines. That big tub of Red Vines, I've always, like, I don't know, that used to be a thing we would drink root beers out of.
So Twizzlers is owned by, I think, Mars or Hershey. And so I think they're...
Twizzlers headquarters, Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Okay.
Red Vine's headquarters, a 5-minute walk from me.
There you
go. So maybe it's just shorter trucking times.
Yeah. I mean, Twizzlers' origins are traced to New York's Young and Smiley confectionery firm in 1845, which was bought by Hershey's in 1977.
Okay.
And then the American Licorice Company of Chicago premiered its black licorice vines in 1914. And then the classic Raspberry Vines, which is what Red Vine's original name was, made their debut 6 years later.
Wait, are Red Vines raspberry?
They're supposed to be raspberry.
Are they?
I don't fuck with either, really, because they're not tart enough. I need them to, like, Nerd Ropes are the rope that was promised. Like, I need it to be like sweet and tart. I don't like, they're just both so dull to
me.
So
you're a Sour Patch guy.
So yeah, that is my candy of preference. The Sandy Patch, the Sour Patch Kid.
My teenage daughters, welcome to the world.
Yeah, yeah.
You candy.
I think they mix the best with popcorn too. I love to dump my Sour Patch Kids in. They also, so I was going to say the Raisinettes, I said earlier when you were talking about Raisinettes that you can dump the whole box in, but actually Raisinettes, they all go to the bottom. So you have to do a layered thing. You have to do like a handful.
Totally.
Sour Patch Kids though, like for whatever reason, they don't always fall all the way to the bottom. You can dump the
whole
thing.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Why are there states that have none? Like Maine apparently has no favorite candy. They refused to report.
Yeah. They hate joy. I wonder if like Cinemark doesn't operate there maybe.
Yeah, I think that's probably it. Cinemark doesn't have any chains there.
Oh, they operate in New Hampshire, but not Vermont, huh? Okay. I see the lines being drawn. But, and like, yeah, Twizzlers are also... Like, I know people who are like, you got to get a fresh batch of Twizzlers. You got to get a fresh batch of Twizzlers.
Fresh batch.
I just got, someone I know, like, got a shipment of Twizzlers recently, and they're like, I got fresh ones. Come try them. They don't taste fucking better fresh.
It's like it's sour. It's like it's sourdough bread or something.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just like, I get that there are freshies you want to have from Halloween candy, right? Like a fresh Abba Zaba. That is good. Like when they when they go too long, they turn to cement or whatever. But a Twizzler or like a Red Vine, I don't know about like a stale one where I'm like, I think I'm just not as
candy.
Into the licorice.
Candy freshness is real. I have come to appreciate that the freshness of a candy over time definitely helps. Is it? It's better like when it's kind of new. Like when you're eating Halloween candy, like in the new year, that shit is no longer any good.
Right.
For the most part. I mean,
our neighborhood kids took everything but left the Tootsie Rolls, which really surprised me. I love Tootsie Rolls. The fudge.
I'm not
what, Leela?
I'm not a fan of the Tootsie Rolls. The dance or the candy.
Yeah.
I like it. It's good. But they kept like moving. Literally
moving them aside.
Moving them aside and looking for the sour stuff like Jack.
Yeah. I like the sour stuff. The kids these days, that's how you know we're a young hip podcast. We say
yes,
kids
you
these
are.
Days.
Yeah.
They like the sour candy, that's for sure.
The 6ix9ine boys, the 6ix9ine boys should have done a collab with the makers of the Tootsie Roll to
they
just
didn't.
Have like
they
a,
never did. There's probably some commercial somewhere.
I know. I mean, what happened to Quad City, you know? Where have how far have we fallen in this time since 1995 or 6?
Their music is still very popular in all the parties, so I don't know, you know, even like high school proms.
Oh, they still know about Miami Bass?
Are still whooping, there it is. Isn't that them? Is that them? Oh, no, it's not them?
No, 6ix9ine. No.
Quad City DJs, right. Quad City DJs. Isn't that them? The whoop, there it is. No?
That was
a
DC... Wait, what, tag team, back again. People, let me hear some noise. DC's in the house, jump, enjoy. A party over here.
Sad moment yesterday where I was playing that song in the car. It's been on my kids' playlist since they were, you know, 2. And my 6-year-old was like, yeah, I don't really like this song.
Oh!
I was like, no.
Really?
That's a hard moment.
Yeah.
Seriously.
I think it's probably because we've worn it out, but it's still...
Wow. Mm. They really don't? Huh.
That's
so they can't.
Brutal.
So they cannot dig it.
Yeah. I said, can
you ever
dig
turn
it?
Around and.
while
y'all
driving?
Dig it? We can dig it.
Dad,
come on,
look at the road. Just look at the road, Dad.
Stop looking around asking me, can we dig it? Our own graves because you're about to crash this car? No.
Miles, what's your favorite candy? Did you say? Oh, you said the ropes?
I said 9 things because I'm high when I go into a movie theater, and I have to indulge all my senses, sweet and
but
savory.
But none of ours were really on here, like other than I guess Red Vines.
I will say Reese's Pieces I love, but that's all because of E.T.
E.T. is the best product placement of all time. It remains the best product placement of all time. I don't think I like Reese's Pieces. I don't think I've ever liked them. But I still fuck with them when I'm at a movie theater because of E.T. And because of E.T., I started getting them when I was young at the movie theater. And just have like an association where I'm like, man, if I eat a pound of Reese's Pieces, I get a wild sugar high. So I still remember getting those at Honey, I Shrunk the Kids when I was a child.
Wow.
Those were the days.
What are your thoughts on Reese's Pieces?
I'm neutral. I'm very blah, bland, meh. I don't have, you know, I don't hate them. I don't love them. They're kind of just meh. But I find it interesting that you would like, that your palate would enjoy a food because of a movie.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting.
That's it's like the association. It's purely the association. There's like, there have been a few movies where like, or TV shows, I started eating stuff because of what I saw on TV. Like, I remember Abba Zaba because of How High. Or no, I mean Half Baked. They're talking about Abba Zaba, and I was like, I gotta try that. And then I was like, oh, okay, this is interesting. Reese's Pieces because of E.T. There was one other one that, in Mallrats, this dude is eating like chocolate covered pretzels in a scene. And then I became, I just like went all in on chocolate covered pretzels.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think what all that to say is I'm stupid. Yeah. And I want to be like TV screen.
The advertisements have worked. They work on you.
Huge.
100%.
Yeah.
100%.
And I didn't knowingly say I'm eating this because of E.T. It's just that E.T. eating those things, and it had like they foleyed a nice little crunch whenever he ate it.
Yeah.
And the colors of the bag, for whatever reason, it worked. They got my ass. And that was supposed to be M&M's, and Mars fucked up and just were like, we're not interested in putting our candy in your little movie. And so they went with Reese's Pieces. And
Yeah. And they're like, you can do it for free. And
you
look
know
at them
too
now.
Much about this.
Yeah. We did a whole thing on it because we were really thinking about how like seminal that is for Reese's Pieces, that E.T. thing. And I think it's also seen as wacky little fingers just drop a couple of Reese's Pieces. Like,
that's appetizing.
I don't know why, but it felt magical.
It does. It works for some reason. It shouldn't. None of it should work.
I can't.
I won't
offer
judge you. We will not judge you.
I can't offer you a good explanation.
I judge myself.
Those I'm nasty wrong. Little fingers, though.
All right. That's going to do it for this week's Weekly Zeitgeist. Please like and review the show if you like the show. Means the world to Miles. He needs your validation, folks. I hope you're having a great weekend, and I will talk to you Monday. Bye. Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Hey there, I'm Dr. Maya Shunker, and I'm a scientist who studies human behavior. Many of us have experienced a moment in our lives that changes everything, that instantly divides our life into a before and an after. On my podcast, A Slight Change of Plans, I talk to people about navigating these moments. Their stories are full of candor and hard-won wisdom. And you'll hear from scientists who teach us how we can be more resilient in the face of change. Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Summon your anticipation for an all-new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabby Collins. This season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. I sit down with Nicola Coughlan, Luke Newton, Shonda Rhimes, and more. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix May 16th. Then fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. New episodes drop starting May 2nd.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.